What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
We continue Palestine Post with Dr. Usama Magdisi, Professor of History and Chancellor's Chair at the University of California, Berkeley. He was previously Professor of History and the first holder of the Arab American Educational Foundation Chair of Arab Studies at Rice University in Houston. He is the author of many books, including Age of Coexistence, The Ecumenical Frame, and Making of the Modern Arab World, which was published in 2019 by the University of California Press. Welcome back to the show, Professor. Thank you so much for joining us. You're muted.
It's good to be with you, Kat.
I want to actually start with you where I ended with Samer. And that was, right, and I preface it by saying, I'm not Palestinian, and I don't have people in Palestine. I have not lost hundreds of people. So from my political purview, what I think about it, what I can't think about it, really doesn't matter. My job is to follow the leadership of the Palestinian comrades that I follow, right, and do as I am told. I have seen some other folks who don't hold my political purview, who are also not Palestinian, right, sort of really rip apart the 20-point plan, and I will not call it a peace plan because I got into a peace, and yes, there's lots of problems with it. Howsoever, what the folks that I follow, right, while being wary and while telling us to be cautious, are glad that there's a little bit of breath, that people are not being bombed incessantly. Israel has still attacking and murdering Palestinians. I cover that at the top of the show. It's not where we were just a few days ago. So that's A, your thoughts about that dialectic. And then the other question that I have for you is, I've sort of been fascinated, actually, that we got to where we're at, that it's far from perfect. But it's something, and I have to believe that that's something because of international outrage, right? It's not because Trump or Israel have any moral barometer. From an organizing standpoint, does this present an opening to get to the next place we need to be as we continue to fight for a free Palestine? Those two questions, two-part question.
Well, I mean, the first question, Kat, is it's a hard, I mean, first of all, obviously, I think any single Palestinian that I've talked to that I know, anyone, actually, you don't have to be Palestinian, just a sense of relief that the immediate intensity of the slaughter has been paused. I think that's really important. I think people do need, as you said, to catch a breath. But of course, I think it's absurd for anyone to suggest that this is peace, in the sense that we're talking about a society in Gaza that has been absolutely and utterly devastated, ruthlessly devastated. The annihilation of universities, the annihilation of schools, the annihilation, above all, of people, of hospitals, of shelters, of homes. UNICEF was just, I was looking at some of the statistics coming out now. UNICEF estimates, that's the UN agency, estimates that 9 of 10 Palestinian homes in Gaza are either totally destroyed or damaged. So this was and as we know, this was a genocide. The Human Rights Council of the UN has called it such. We've known this, we've been talking about this for now 2 years. The idea that a genocide is paused or ended, at least in its most immediate phase, is not a recipe for peace. Unless, of course, as your previous guest, Samer, was talking about and you mentioned, unless the underlying conditions, you know, the profound injustice, the extraordinary oppression of Palestinians is brought to an end. And that leads me to the second point that you raised, the question of pressure. Obviously, it's clear to me that neither the Israeli state nor Donald Trump and his administration have a moral barometer when it comes to Palestinians. That's quite clear. The Israelis are still harming Palestinians. They're still torturing Palestinians. They still have thousands of Palestinian prisoners in jail. Their settlers are rampaging through the West Bank and through Jerusalem. And, you know, it is an extremist government whose leader is indicted for war crimes and crimes against humanity. So the idea of anyone suggesting that this came about because they finally sort of realized that there's a moral reckoning, I don't think so. I think partly, I think as you said, there has been an enormous amount of pressure, global solidarity and pressure. But I think it's also important to understand that we're in a moment now in the U.S. in particular where the counter movement or the counterattack or the repression is intense and ongoing. Everywhere we see, you can see the censorship in terms of the media, the censorship in universities, the crackdown continues. And so, you know, I think it's important to as you're as Samer, I think his name is Samer, right, your previous guest, you know, mentioned, it's important to hold two things at once. There's a contradiction. On the one hand, we are facing this extreme sort of backlash. On the other hand, there's also people can be happy that at least the immediate slaughter has stopped.
As I was, my brain was going, why would Trump do this? Why would Trump do this? Why would Trump do this? My brain said, aha, the Abraham Accords. Perhaps.
What
For
about them?
him to be able to continue, for it to continue, for the trade to open up. When I look at the involvement of the folks that make up the United Arab Emirates, I may be completely off, and feel free to say, no, Kat, you're bonkers. Their heavy involvement in all of this. I was like, maybe that's why he did it in
Yeah, but
part.
the UAE, I mean, the United Arab Emirates already is part of the Abraham, so-called Abraham Accords, which is a travesty to the name Abraham and to the prophetic tradition. That the idea of these are accords that are absolutely, as you know perfectly well, and as you've spoken about many times, these are accords that are designed to exclude the Palestinians, to deny Palestinians self-determination and freedom and liberation, and so. Yeah, it could be that there's a sense that sort of there's a lot of pressure in the Arab states as well. But I think what's really sort of noteworthy here is the idea that at this Egyptian summit that Trump sort of hastily convened, it's so interesting to see the Palestinians themselves, people, are not represented. They're being represented by everybody but by Palestinians. So whether or not the Arab states that are totally subordinate to the US are continuing their subordination or not is sort of in a sense, you know, that's sort of the obvious. I think the question I think for Trump is perhaps maybe we don't know, of course, why we're not privy to the information as to why Trump demanded at this very moment a cessation to the immediate slaughter. Maybe the his base was fracturing. I don't know. It's an interesting question. Maybe the Israeli assault on Doha and Qatar, after all, a major U.S. ally in the region where the largest U.S. air base in the Middle East is located. And the idea that the Israelis can simply go out and bomb, you know, Qatar, a U.S. ally, sort of really threw things up in the air for a lot of people. The pro-American people in the region were saying, wait, hang on a second, we're your ally, and yet you're allowing Israel to bomb us with such impunity. What is going on here? And I think that sense of Israel out of control, completely acting with total impunity. Remember, Israel is bombed and still bombs. Yesterday and today, they bombed Lebanon. They bombed Lebanon routinely. They're bombing in Gaza still. They're still killing people. They're still their settlers are rampaging throughout the West Bank, as we noted earlier. They bombed throughout the region routinely in Syria, in Lebanon, in Yemen, and so on and so forth. And so, the idea of I think Trump maybe who knows, but maybe some people in the Trump administration, maybe Trump himself, maybe his Gulf subordinates and allies basically told them, you know, what's going on here, but we don't know.
Yeah, and it's probably multi-layered, and I'll never be able to decipher what happens in that man's head. So, I've got a question that this is a little bit born out of ignorance. I wanted to look at who actually signed what at the summit. So, Donald Trump announced, he announced and signed this 20-point plan as a guarantor. The Egyptian president signed it. Turkey was a signatory. The Emir of Qatar signed as a guarantor. What does it mean to be a guarantor? What does that mean?
Nothing. I mean, the only person who can guarantee anything at this point is honestly is going to be Donald Trump himself. In other words, I mean, just look at, go through the points. I mean, it's the actual text is so ideologically anti-Palestinian at every level, and the idea of, you know, let's see if any of these points, if any of these points are going to be honored. I mean, let's see if the Israelis actually, and the Israelis, you know, we know they've reneged on virtually every ceasefire they've signed in the last 2 years. I mean, look what happened in Lebanon. They signed an agreement in January to cease fire, and yet they've been bombing Lebanon routinely for the past year. It's extraordinary. For the past several months, they've been bombing and bombing and bombing and killing and bombing and bombing and constantly provoking because they feel they have no pushback. And so, who is going to guarantee that the Israelis will honor a withdrawal from Gaza? And even though this 20-point plan doesn't actually talk about a full withdrawal from Gaza. And
No.
so, Let's see what happens. I mean, I put very little faith, honestly, in any of these agreements signed, because the reality is that absent enormous direct U.S. pressure on Israel in the immediate short term, the Israelis feel they can do anything they want and they can get away with it.
So point where I was going with that was basically where you went, that it doesn't mean anything. Point 14 in the plan says a guarantee will be provided by regional partners to ensure that Hamas and the factions comply with their obligations and that New Gaza poses no threat to its neighbors or its
Yeah, but
people.
this is like absolute. I mean, come on, I mean, Kat, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is absurd. We're talking about a place, Gaza, that has been absolute an annihilation of an entire society, the obliteration of an entire society. What fantasy world are they living in, where they're talking about so that we're going to go back to normal, things are going to be great, and we're going to provide you with a tiny sustenance of aid to allow you to not die, basically, and not be obliterated by the sort of by the Israeli military machine. On the other hand, you are expected to be normal and sort of give up. Basically, it's an instrument of surrender. And so the underlying conditions of the Palestinians in Gaza, their ability to live a normal life, their ability is completely absent in this plan. There's no guarantee whatsoever. There's not even any discussion of freedom and liberation for Palestinians in Gaza or in the West Bank or in Palestine in general. So the idea of talking about peace or talking about stability, absent basic fundamental opportunities and justice for Palestinians and a future, it's just, is exactly what it is. It's just a piece of paper signed for a theater, as far as I can tell.
Nonsensical. Yeah. Professor
No, it's not
McDissey.
nonsensical. It's not nonsensical. What it is an indication of the balance of power that is so, in the state power that is so overwhelmed, and the geopolitics that is so overwhelmingly directed against the Palestinians at this point.
Professor McDissey, I only have like 60 seconds with you. What's the critical question that folks aren't asking that we should be asking or talking about right now in this moment?
That the fundamental conditions of injustice persist and continue and are flagrant, and inevitably that's going to produce, almost certainly, as any historian will tell you, or any person who thinks about this part of the world with decency and ethics and integrity, there's going to be further rounds. Ultimately, there's going to be resistance to injustice always. We don't know how this will be. We don't know what will happen. We have no idea what's going to happen in the immediate future, but the basic conditions of profound an absolutely abhorrent injustice that people in the region are facing, especially the Palestinians, are going to continue, and there's going to be ultimately more and more of this denial and deferral of justice for the Palestinians.
Professor McDissey, I really appreciate you coming on the show and the conversation. So
Thank you.
hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.